Here's your best five games of the slate, as far as I can see. And we'll look at some of the other matchups on the other end. This was actually tough to rank, though. There's some really good games around the National Football League. I think the best game, most interesting game, as far as storylines go, is Minnesota-Green Bay. The Vikings are 3-0. They just throttled the Texans. Now they're playing the Packers, one of the two teams in the NFC North that was expected to finish better than Minnesota. If the Packers get Jordan Love back, I think this is actually going to be a pretty telling game. If they don't and it's Malik Willis again, well, then Minnesota may well win, and they're 4-0, and you can kind of explain it away. But I still think the Vikings are starting to turn heads more than just they did early in the season when it was a cute story, to the point where people are now going, all right, Kevin O'Connell, coach of the year, Sam Darnold, one of the best stories in the early part of the season. Who knows? He keeps playing like this all year. Maybe he's looking at a franchise tag. What do you do with him? What do you do with J.J. McCarthy? And what's going to happen in this division? The flip side is the Packers have won twice without Love.
Yep.
Matt LaFleur's done an incredible job. If they're to get Love back and get a win, now you're 3-1, you're even with Minnesota, and they're in a really good spot moving forward to start hitting their stride and climb north in the north. So I think this is just a revealing game, and I'm really excited to watch
it. It's a huge game. Opened up as Packers 4.5-point favorites. That's now moved to 3, 2.5, depends on your book. This is a huge one, because Green Bay can survive this stretch with or without Jordan Love at 100%. I'm not sure if he plays this weekend or not. If he does, I don't know how close to 100% he's going to be. But for Minnesota, you know, stacking the hay right at this stage, right? They're doing things people didn't think they would do, and their schedule's really hard out of the gate, and it softens up as the season goes. But if they end up 4-0, you got to change your eye line for them a little bit. You already do. You already have to kind of put some respect on their name in terms of what they've done defensively, certainly. We're not used to that. And Kevin O'Connell, as you said, early leader for Coach of the Year, taking everyone else's leftovers many times over in Sam Darnold and fitting him to your scheme and system and getting pretty good production, pretty amazing.
Just another of the great offensive minds who came through this Washington building. The Bills are 3-0. They travel to Baltimore up 95 to take on the Ravens. Baltimore lost their first two games and then got their season back on track with a win against the Dallas Cowboys. They are now 1-2. They've got more to play for, frankly, more on the line than the Bills do. Goes without reasoning that, you know, 1-3, you're in big, big trouble from a playoff standpoint. So that hunger makes me lean toward Baltimore, but the Bills have actually been exceptional. Josh Allen's playing the best football of any quarterback in the league. He's got 7 touchdowns, no interceptions, and they're doing it without their receivers of a year ago. It's kind of a very diversified offensive attack. He's playing point guard. He's running a little more than he did. They're running the football a little better than they have traditionally. I like the way the Bills are playing. Bills-Ravens is going to be fun.
Bills have been terrific through three games. 64-point differential, the best in the AFC, certainly through 3 weeks, and among the best in the NFL. They have been fantastic on both sides of the football. I thought they would not be. I thought they got older, a little bit more attrition in terms of injury. I thought they were worse in terms of playmaking. And you know what? It doesn't matter when Josh Allen goes, and that's what's happened. He's the MVP through 3 weeks and change now that we've gotten week 4 started officially. The Ravens really put themselves in a bad spot by losing in week 2, giving up a lead in the fourth quarter to the stupid Raiders. They played pretty evenly with the AFC defending and Super Bowl champs Kansas City Chiefs. We're a toenail away from being tied going into overtime, maybe winning it with a 2-point conversion. But that's a bad loss in week 2. So now, because you're at such a premium where you have to harvest some of these nuts here to get yourself back into a playoff picture, they are more desperate than Buffalo, I think, to your point.
Yeah, they almost have to beat Buffalo just to make up for the Ravens game, essentially. The Seahawks and Lions have played two of the more entertaining football games in the entire league the last 2 years. Scores where both teams are in the 40s, just really great back-and-forth shootouts. And the NFL saw that and said, we're going to put them on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, it's like a Big 12 game.
Seahawks at the Lions. Seattle's 3-0, but they haven't really played anybody. They beat Denver by 6 points in week 1. They survived the Patriots overtime field goal win. And then they just completely bullied the Dolphins in week 3, but there was no Tua, 21-point deficit for Miami in that game. So now they really get tested, and we're going to find out if Seattle is any good against the Detroit Lions. Meanwhile, Detroit is 2-1. They lost that game. They won back to the Buccaneers, where they outplayed, but Goff had a clunker. I actually didn't think Jared Goff was great against the Cardinals either, so they need him to get back to playing like he did, really, frankly, over the last 2 whole years to try to advance to 3-1 going into their bye week post Seattle.
Yeah, Detroit, it's been strange for them because you would take every metric possible that they put up in their week two loss against Tampa Bay, but again, they lost to Tampa Bay. 463 total yards. Everything said that they were going to win that game, then of course they didn't. And, you know, they were fine against Arizona, but again, couldn't really punch the ball in enough and had some self-sabotage and some things. They haven't played their best yet, but they're still, I think, pretty well regarded, and rightfully so, as one of the best teams in the NFC, and kind of a challenge to, you know, San Francisco, whoever happens to else be up there at the top. But these games with Seattle, you stole the words right out of my mouth, have been unbelievably entertaining over the last couple of seasons. So normally you'd go, these two teams, Seattle, Detroit, it's on my list of games of the week. I've got that one circled because that has been perfect theater the last couple of years.
It's been one of those 1 o'clock games that's available in a couple of markets. But it's a red zone fest.
Yeah.
You know, it's just Scott Hansen talks about that game.
Yeah, like 84% of the time it's on that one. And they're back in the red zone again.
So the NFL wised up and said, all right, let's show it to everybody
on
prime time. So that's my number three game of the week. So you got Vikings, Packers 1, Bills, Ravens 2, Seahawks, Lions 3. We're going to go back to the NFC here. NFC heavy because the games in that conference are just great this weekend. Saints, Falcons is my number four game. This is going to be an important game in the NFC South. New Orleans is 2-1. They lost a game they probably shouldn't have to Philadelphia this past week. They could easily be sitting at 3-0. They've been awesome offensively going into that third game against Philly, and they crashed back down to earth. They were Washington before Washington. They were the team not punting. They scored on every single one of their drives for the first two games of the season. Think about that. That having been said, they got a tough customer perhaps in Atlanta at home. The Falcons played with, almost coulda, shoulda, woulda beat the Chiefs this past week. Wrong end of a bad call, or else maybe they would have. But the Falcons are 1-2, and they don't really have margin for error this week. The good news for Atlanta, I guess, is both of their losses have been to AFC teams. So as you go forward this year, if you're tiebreaker friendly, the season's gone about how you would design it with a 1-2 record. They beat the Eagles in the conference. They lost to the Steelers and the Chiefs. But they've got three consecutive division games coming up. New Orleans, Tampa, Carolina, with the next two at home, they really could benefit immensely from beating New Orleans and Tampa. That would get them to 3-2, 3-0 in the conference, 2-0 in the division going into a game with Carolina. But it starts with a Saints team that's probably better on paper and yet still an underdog via the sports book.
Yeah, this one's wild. So it's one of those things where when you get off to that start that the Saints did, right, the third or fourth most points in history through 2 weeks, and then you come back down to earth, and if you lose in week four, everyone's like, yeah, I knew it was a joke. I knew it was fraudulent. I knew those guys weren't that good, and this is just, you know, a weird early season hiccup. It doesn't matter. But if you win, and you look pretty good doing it, I'm not saying you got to score 45 points, although that'd be pretty sweet. But if you win this game, you're 3-1 in command. You probably should be 4-0, kind of to your point. And the only fluke then is the weird loss to Philadelphia, where two of you guys ran into each other. And now you're in charge of that weird NFC South. From Atlanta's perspective, kind of same deal, right? You need some validation. You need some a few things after that weird week one performance where Kirk Cousins didn't look his part. Next thing you know, you could be right up at the top of this, again, herky-jerky, bizarre division with Tampa having a tough opponent as well.
Speaking of Philly, the Eagles cracked the list here. The Eagles and the Bucs in Tampa, game number 5. So 4 of these 5 games are NFC-only games. But Philly and Tampa has a chance to be really good. 2-1 Eagles leading the NFC East. 2-1 Tampa leading the NFC South, right? Philly coming off of an impressive win where they balled out defensively, as you've said, against the Saints. I still don't think they're that good, and they're not quite healthy, so they're right for the taking for Tampa Bay. But the Bucs were horrible last weekend.
Downright bad.
They looked great against Washington, dominated them. They looked really good against Detroit, got outplayed and stole a win. And then they got beat by 19 by the Bo Nix-led Denver Broncos, 26-7. That game, by the way, was at home, where they're home again against the Eagles. I actually like them to beat Philly. I love when teams are at home 2 straight weeks. I also hate when teams are on the road 2 straight weeks. Philly, second straight game away from home, whereas the Bucs are at Raymond James for the second time in as many Sundays. So I think the Bucs win this game against Philly and get to 3-1.
They've owned Philadelphia of late. I can't point to all the numbers, but it just that playoff drubbing from a couple seasons ago as Philadelphia was swooning down the stretch.
That was last year.
I meant last year. But this is an important game for Tampa because they've played worse each week. They probably didn't deserve to beat Detroit in week number two. They did. You don't take it away from them. But their worst game of the year is their most recent game. So this, you know, they're puffing up their chest a little bit the first couple of weeks, telling everybody, see, nobody respected us. No one believed in us. Well, you could also be 2-2 here through four games. For Philadelphia, again, they're probably thinking, we're getting by right now without A.J. Brown, without Devontae Smith, without Lane Johnson, without a couple other bodies. If we could somehow beat a group that's given us some fits over the years, we'll be 3-1 through a tough stretch and be feeling pretty good about ourselves.